Welcome to another episode of An Echo of Glory. We've got a special guest today.
Thank you.
No, it's not you. It's not you, Gary Diamond. And it's not the lesser spotted Jake Robson, although he would be a special guest when he's never on. It's Sim from We Are Tottenham TV. Hello.
My pleasure being here. Been watching pretty much every pod since you started.
You're the guy.
So who's going to be on our comments today?
Yeah, who's going to be on the comments?
A big, big fan of the pod, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. We'll come. We'll talk to you all about your pod and your journey on We Are Tottenham TV. I love that We Are Tottenham TV stuff. Gary has appeared on We Are Tottenham
TV. He has.
Well, we were on. You kindly invited us on, but actually before that, you've been on one of your amazing videos. This is a special pod too, not just because we got Sim on, but because this did not happen. We did not do something in this pod in 2024. What was it?
No idea. There's lots of things that we've not done on this pod.
We didn't do a pod in 2024 on the back of three Premier League wins because we didn't win three Premier League games since 2023.
Is that right? So yeah. This is the first time since doing the pod that we've won three on the spin?
No, the pod's been going since May 23. So December 2023 was the last time we won three games in a row in the league.
Okay.
So, which is after the first 10 games, which everyone always mentions. Oh, it was only the first 10 games.
Right. We're going to start with the club news. Not much, really. Couple of defeats. 21s lost 3-2 to Wolves, and the 18s lost 2-0 to Reading.
Great.
And the women didn't play.
Excellent.
It's been a while since I think we had, last year we were getting like, oh, the women won, the men won, the 18s won, the 21s won.
That was like the beginning of last season, in those 10 games when we were top of all the leagues. And
yeah.
You know, everybody thought that.
Well, the 21s has been decimated, haven't they? Yeah. Everyone's gone on loan. We've promoted some players. So it's no real surprise the 21s are falling. I think that's why you've seen an influx in a lot of youth players coming through. I think in January, didn't we? I think on deadline day, we signed like three or four youth players. I think they really want to bolster those players to keep the kind of chain moving.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, we've got a lot of... at the moment, we've got a lot of kind of youth players who are really, really close. Apologies, still getting used to the studio. We've got a lot of youth players who are doing incredible, and a lot of people think we've got a golden generation, but now they're kind of out on loan, and we've got to bolster those youth numbers.
Yeah, and like you said, for a while, a long time this season, most of those 21s have been sat on our bench.
Mm.
So the 21s were decimated. I think the 17s, might have said this last week, they got to a cup, but you know, hopefully they win that. Right, so one thing we get on this pod, we get a few comments. Already, Ace Ventura is loving our intro song, just a little sting we do at the beginning. Nice crossover, that's for you, Sim. And then Daniel Pinkus, a regular. Sim was an advocate of Ange, liking today's pod already. Well, there's going to be a bit of in and there's going to be a bit of out.
We like the variety of views, don't we? That's what it's about, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we all have different views, but the main driver is that we want what we believe to be best for Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. That's it. That's what's driving our views.
Yeah. So. Right, this is where I have to bring up our new section, and I'll probably get it wrong because it's so new, I can't remember what we're doing. We only started it last week, which is, oh, there you go. It's what we've been talking about in our Echo group. And Gary, I'm going to let you start this one because last night...
I don't know what's coming, so...
No, I know. Last night...
Yes!
Napoli are not top of the league
anymore.
Things
you love to see.
So
meltdowns incoming.
Inter got a late winner against Genoa on Saturday night, and then Como, which is Cesc Fabregas' team, beat Napoli. They're sort of putting all the big teams away at the moment. So it means your mate Conte's not top, Gaz.
What did you call him?
Your mate Conte.
You use the O. I rarely do. Carry on.
Oh, very good. Very clever. What else were we talking about?
So you're saying we can stop saying, oh, our past three managers are all top of the league now. So yes. None of them are top now. Yeah. So actually, are they actually that good, any of them? No.
What else did we talk about this week? A lot about you. This is you as well, Gaz. This is not the Gary Diamond half hour, but this was us talking about Jed. And we'll talk about Jed Spence a little bit more when we talk about Ipswich. And this is someone posted, obviously, way back, maybe 18 months ago. Spurs have listened to any offers for Jed Spence. He has absolutely failed to impress Ange Postecoglou. And that came from Alistair Gold. So we believe that maybe that was the case. And Gary, as the chairman of the Jed Spence fan club.
Founding member, chairman. You're not allowed to join unless you are always convinced. We're talking a lot more about Spence, player that I absolutely love, and proved his value and worth again on the weekend. So we'll come back to him because there's a lot to say.
And then there was this, which made us laugh, from Paddy Power. Incredible to think that Liverpool have all but secured the league title by beating Man City less than a month after Arsenal won the league by doing the same thing. Sim, I'm sure you've got, you know, Arsenal fans in your WhatsApp groups.
Oh, a lot.
Insufferable.
Absolutely, and their downfall is so beautiful to see. The fact that they've been on the coattails of Man City for so long, and in the one season Man City falter, they're the ones that also, they're faltering, not even worse, but obviously the fact that Liverpool are the ones coming forward in Slot's first season, it's beautiful to see. And Arsenal have been so on their high horse for the last 3 years. The fact that they're probably not going to end up with the trophy this season is lovely, yeah. I have to say.
Yeah, absolutely lovely. And for some reason, I've got a picture of Dane Scarlett winning a header. Good header.
Unbelievable assist.
Yeah, his first Premier League assist.
That kind of like Vertonghen to Son assist against Burnley is just like...
No, that's not an assist. No, but as a centre...
It's a good header. It's a brave
as a
header.
Forward,
he's won the flick. He's done his job.
Yeah.
It's not an assist. Come on now. You, of all people, have a thing about assists. That is not an assist.
Yeah, but as a centre forward, low level, I'm like... Remember my head? That was me, by the way. I'll be reminding Kulu that was me.
Yeah.
Does the goal happen without it?
Exactly.
No, of course.
Exactly.
Exactly. Like, no. Son, 2 assists, no questions, right?
Yeah.
Madison, assist, no question.
Yeah.
That is a part of the play on the halfway line. He doesn't mean for that to be a goal, really. He just means to advance.
Let's be honest, he won more in that few minutes he was on than Tell did.
Well, that's another conversation we'll come to. Yeah.
Right. There you go. That's what we've been talking about in our group this week. I'm sure you'd like always say.
Invigorating, isn't it?
Yeah, but similar people probably have similar discussions. Right, Sim, before we get on to Ipswich, I want to talk to you about We Are Tottenham TV, one of the best, biggest Spurs channels out there.
Thank you.
When did it start? How did it start?
So,
is it now the biggest watch-along Spurs channel?
Yeah, biggest fan channel, right? I'd say, yeah. There are obviously some like... what's it called? There are some figures, you know, these people like Expressions who are bigger than us. But in terms of like fan channels, yeah, we are the biggest. And we're very proud of that. We launched it in April 2017, which was a long time ago now. I remember we actually had this idea about kind of, we saw YouTube was kind of becoming a big thing in terms of fan channels, in terms of the football scene. Obviously, we all know, I think AFTV, they were being going from like 2013, but there wasn't really a Tottenham kind of equivalent to it. We didn't really, not equivalent, but it wasn't really, we were watching a lot of football YouTube, and I would say there wasn't really a lot of fans who were match-going fans, season ticket holders, who kind of represented what Tottenham fans were feeling on YouTube, like kind of authentically. There was a channel, I think it was called Spurred On, which was, you know, it was a good channel, but I felt like a lot of the people on there were more kind of presenters, more people trying to get into the media industry rather than Tottenham fans looking to give Tottenham fans a voice. And obviously me and my brother, we live and breathe Tottenham for our whole lives. We've been going ever since we were young, going with my grandpa, my dad, ever since we were young. And I've been obsessed with Spurs, you know, probably since I was 9 or 10 years old. All we ever did, me and my brother, was talk about Tottenham pretty much. And in fact, you know, when I was at school, I was never very good at school because I was always just watching Tottenham. I was always obsessed. I remember I was studying for an exam, one of my GCSEs, and I walked in and my dad walked into my bedroom and I was watching Spurs instead of studying. He goes, "You're not going to make a career out watching Tottenham. You know, get back to your books." I was like, well, I think from that moment I thought, I have to make sure I can turn that around. I think... We had this idea once we saw all these football YouTube channels sprouting. But when Spurred On kind of launched, we were like, okay, well, they're doing it, so we're just going to leave it. But they kind of stopped after a couple of years. And then we saw there was a bit of a gap in the market. There's kind of an opportunity to do something that maybe we enjoy. I don't think we went into it thinking it was going to be our full-time job, to be honest.
No, of course. Not
I
that
think,
point,
no,
yeah.
no. We just thought, look, let's just, this YouTube thing was still, it's funny to say it now, but it was still fairly like novel and new at that point. It wasn't like something that I really, like people thought like, this could be a full-time job. It was just kind of, let's see if we can make a bit of money. Let's have a bit of fun. Let's just put our kind of opinions on camera. And it was something that we'd never been in front of camera before, but we just thought, let's just put our conversations that we have like off camera every day about Tottenham, let's just put them on camera and see if anyone's interested.
And what was your first video?
We went to, it was at home to Watford in like 2017. We won 4-0. I've got a crazy memory as well for Spurs results. That's also why I think
that
it
when
works Delhi, quite well.
Delhi smashed one in from distance?
Yes, from 25 yards, yeah. Right in the, when we were kind of chasing down Chelsea for the Premier League. And we kind of just documented our day. Me, Ben, and my grandpa, we, you know, showed us like in the car having conversations about football in the CAF, and then obviously at the game. And I think straight away people started to get on board. I think our first ever video got like, you know, I think 5,000 or 6,000 views, which is like, for YouTube, usually you're like in the hundreds, like in your first video or something like that. And so I think we knew from that point.
Which is where we were for a long time.
Still are.
I think, like we knew at that point, like, okay, we might be on something here, because already people are starting to watch it, and people are, it's starting to get a bit of noticed and a bit of notoriety. So I think it was a bit nerve-wracking being in front of camera, and it definitely takes getting used to, and it definitely takes, you know, practice, and it's something we had to work on. But and obviously we were also doing this a long time alongside a full-time job. I was in a training to be an accountant at the time, and you know, it was a lot of hard work to build the channel, basically earning no money for about 3 years, essentially, I would say, before we before it became like profitable. But I think it's something that I never looked back on. I think I quit my job 4 years ago to go full time on it, and it's probably the best decision I ever made.
And what, over 170,000 subs, is that right?
Yeah, nearly 180,000 now.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, wow. Thank you. And I think it's probably a dream of mine to be doing this job, because I honestly don't think I'm built for accountancy or doing anything else. I really hated doing these full-time jobs. Look, not knocking it, it just wasn't for me, I don't think. So having this is something that's amazing for me.
It's similar to, this is not about me, this is about you, Sim, but it's similar to me. I remember
you get
getting
in there and make it about you. No,
it's the story, because I remember watching a Bolton Reading, I think it was, playoff final when I should have been revising, and my dad was similar. He was like, "You're supposed to be doing your exams." Not that he said you can't make a living from football. Unfortunately, I work in football and I get paid to watch football, and you're getting paid to watch Tottenham. You know, it's not for everybody. Listen, getting paid to watch Tottenham, you might want to get paid to watch Tottenham. Go on. No, I was going to move it on slightly. Go on.
I just want to say, like, I think from my point of view, since having started doing a pod, and we do it once or twice a week, and you appreciate the amount of work that Johnny puts into putting on a show or two a week, I don't think James. Just, you know, I think watching you guys and how you've grown and the effort that you put into it to be full time, and the thing that sort of strikes me is, you know, you do it out of a love and passion, and I find as well it's a brave thing to do, because people will agree or they disagree, but they won't be shy to tell you their thoughts.
Absolutely.
But they're not up in front of the camera every week doing it, and you put yourselves up there every day, every week, every game. It's really commendable. It's brilliant what you guys have done.
Sim, I had a question from one of our viewers here, Roughneck. Sim, I seem to remember you did some matchday vids before 2017, around 2009-10.
That wasn't me.
That wasn't you?
No, I don't think so.
Some other very handsome man.
09-10, how old was I then? I was probably 17. I don't think YouTube was a thing then, was it? I mean, it was obviously a thing, but it wasn't like football YouTube, I don't think was. I think that was before even AFTV times, I think. I wish I started back then.
Sure. About AFTV, you were going to ask something, weren't you, about that or not?
Well, I wasn't, but I do have a question on AFTV. Do you think the rise of something like AFTV certainly potentially gave you an idea, but has helped you? And do you find that you get better views when we win, or better win views when we lose?
I would say, obviously, AFTV becoming mainstream.
There you go.
Oh,
there you go.
First ever video. You know, you should bring up, oh, I can tell you in a minute, but you should bring up the, if you can find it, the Man City away in the Champions League, that vlog, and you might see a special surprise in that one. But I would say AFTV, obviously, that going mainstream, obviously, people tuning in to watch Arsenal fans melt down. That becomes so big. So much attention.
Important for them to play smoothly.
They weren't the first channel. Redmen, I think, were before them, and they were
better when it's raining.
But look at that.
They've got massive injury problems.
Really sweet, isn't it?
So I would want to bring James is ready to bring this up. This for me, he's not ready to bring it up.
Just from a personal point of view as well, I mean, obviously you do this and you vlog for your channel and that, but the amount of personal memories that you'll be able to like throughout 100%. Your life, like, it's
something that for sure, when it comes to my grandpa who sadly passed away a couple of weeks ago, and I've been just it's actually mad to think about, because I've got so much footage with him going to Spurs, and he was also used to call into our fan shows, and we used to have so many conversations, and to have those memories like on camera is actually really, really special. And it's not something at the time you think about, really, like this is going to be something you look back on, like, and it's going to be so special, but at these moments for me, it's something that I can look back on, and it was like incredible to have. It's incredible to have that, and all those special, special memories.
I don't know what James is doing in there. We ready, James? Bring us up. This for me, this has to be.
Oh my God!
Talk us through this. You might. Gary was in Amsterdam.
I wasn't in the stadium. I didn't get a ticket. I was in Town Square. What we're watching right now, if you're not watching on YouTube, is we are watching.
I look a lot younger.
We're watching Sim and his brother at the Amsterdam Arena. It's about 3-2 going into the last couple of minutes, and we're
people always comment about my unusually high pitched scream.
I think you're forgiven everything at that particular moment. It wouldn't really matter.
Here we go. 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 if there wasn't a purpose perspex green there, you'd have gone over.
I went flying down the stairs.
Here's something that I don't understand. I couldn't do this because I'm arms, legs, feet, and rods. Jesus, how do you hold the camera in that moment? Are you consciously sort of thinking to yourself? I don't want to get this expensive bit of equipment damaged, or I need to film this. For me, it would just go flying.
Yeah, for sure. I think in the early days, it kind of...
Break a few.
Yeah, it probably used to go flying a bit. I think you get used to it, I guess, in terms of just learning how to capture the moments without it being too forced, without it feeling like you're just kind of there to kind of concentrating on recording. I think I think at the beginning it was hard. I think a lot of the beginning it was like, what am I doing? I'm not even watching the game. I'm concentrating too much of the camera.
Yeah.
For sure, that was what it was like at the beginning. But I think you learn how to kind of capture moments while also not being totally focused on just that you're recording, and also being able to be present at the time.
Yeah. Do you ever get people Sims, what are you doing, mate? Put that bloody camera
in. Occasionally. You know, at the beginning, definitely.
At the beginning, yeah.
For sure, at the beginning, people used to be quite... when we first started, people were like, you're just being AFTV. Like, we don't want that in our fan base, all this kind of stuff. We used to get quite a bit of hate, for sure. But I think as time went on and people like knew who we are and got used to us and knew that we're not kind of the same thing. And on the same time as...
You know why we're a different club as well. I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that.
And also, not only that, it's also people got more used to YouTube, used to the YouTube scene, became more mainstream. And it became, now it's like a thing. Like, there are content creators and like, this is like a viable like way of making money. Like, people understand it, especially younger people growing up. They understand that this isn't just like... going away, basically. So I think people right now, I would say over the last few years, we don't get any hate, really, very, very little. Like, people are very much very open to it. And in fact, when we go
probably
to the grounds,
want to be on
we get a lot of love from fans nowadays. Yeah,
I think what you've done very well, that AFTV sort of sensationalizes the losses by getting on the complete idiots and having absolute meltdowns. You haven't done that at all. It's not about sensationalizing the losses to attract fans. I mean, even this weekend, I was watching AFTV.
Right.
Yeah. Obviously.
And do you know what? They had two guys on who said that Lewis Skelly shouldn't have been sent off. And in the comments, someone said, "What have you got these idiots on?" And everyone was replying, "Because it's likes and clicks."
Yeah.
Like, the reason they put up the idiots saying Skelly shouldn't be sent off is because they know it's going
to
get...
Yeah, but I don't no, think no, you, don't, you I, don't seek I, to do that.
We don't
feel.
Seek to do it, but what I would say is, in a similar vein to Robbie, I do have sympathy for him in a sense, because I think when it first started, like, he would just have anyone on. I don't think he seeked out necessarily... characters that
Arsenal they just pushed
it.
So I think in a way
it's just the way it went. And
the reality is we would have anyone, which can be your biggest strength and your biggest weakness in a way, that you will have anyone on. And yes, the ones that get the most notoriety are the crazy people the people who...
The club shop is
exactly,
thrown up over.
Everyone who would tune in to watch. But if you go on their channel, there's a lot of fan cams there that don't get that many views because they're not that interesting, but because people aren't that crazy.
Yeah.
But they don't get that many views and people don't point to them as an example of...
But that's
AFTV
the point, is you've managed on your channel to balance it, I think, very nicely and very well, and that's probably why you have sort of linear numbers, whether we win, lose or draw. We know what we're getting from your channel. I think that's the point that I was trying to make more.
I think for sure when we started it, I wouldn't say like we wouldn't be negative at all, but I think we definitely made a concerted effort. Like this isn't going to be people just like basically losing their shit. Don't know if I can swear on the pod.
Destroy our algorithm. It's fine.
It's not going to be people losing their mind basically every week. That's not what we're going for. Look, if it calls for it, then fair enough. But me and Ben, I would say we're fairly kind of balanced fans. We're fairly positive fans. That's what we try to be. Obviously, there are situations, you know, when you're drawing to Tamworth and things like that, where you can lose your mind. But I think, like most often, me and Ben are kind of different fans. We offer different kind of point of view. He's very, very much the gut, like your typical match going fan, goes to the pub before, has beers. Like, I'm not saying I don't do that. I'm just saying he's like very emotional fan. He very much reacts to what's happening on the pitch in terms of how it makes him feel. I'm very much like I drill into the data. I look after the game, see the stats. I look at the overall things. I'm very much a numbers guy. So we kind of balance each other off like that as well, which I think we have something for everyone.
So Liam says on here, one of our viewers, one of our comments, all my favourite guys talking Tottenham together. Well, that's nice. But as you say, all with a slightly different take, but all good fans and not sensationalists. I think that's what we try and be on this pod.
That's why I love this pod so much.
We're all match going fans. And I said before, just because you go to the game doesn't make you a better or bigger fan, but I think it does provide you with that, the data, that also the historical recall as well, because you go to every single game. But also I just think it allows you to take it in, and like when you went to Liverpool, you're watching Salah up against Spence, and
no, I could see you didn't want it, like 10 rows away from him, up close and personal, and I can come here and say to you, Salah did not want Spence one bit.
it brings a different perspective. Like I said, I'm not just alright, James taking a mic there. It's all Liam's favourite guys talking and Johnny. I'm no one's favourite. I get that. Right, let's move it on to the now. Ben, let's talk to you just over where you are on Spurs. In one of your recent videos, you were live at the protest.
Yes.
So where are you on Spurs, on the pitch and off the pitch?
If we're talking about on the pitch, I was talking about off the pitch first in terms of the protest. Obviously, I would say, for me personally, my brother's a bit different. He's like very staunch, leave me out any means necessary kind of thing. He kind of wants to nick out. And I don't disagree. I think there's definitely more nuance to the conversation than simply they're the worst things ever, and you know they're the worst owners and they just need to be going out. I kind of have sympathy in a sense of the situation they're in. You know, you're competing against the likes of Man City and Chelsea and state-owned clubs, and we're trying to run it in a certain way where it's sustainable, and yourself sustainable, and we're basically playing by the rules where other clubs are not playing by the rules, and that's a situation which is difficult to manage. But having said that, with how, and this is also kind of a credit to Levy while also being a criticism, how he's built up the financial side of Tottenham, can he be doing more with where we are now to kind of get closer to those top clubs? And can we, first of all, be smarter in how we invest, but also, you know, can we invest more wages? Can we spend a bit more money? Can we push the boat out when it really needs it? Can we really go for players which are truly necessary for the team, you know, where we just know they're going to be the right thing? I think it's far too often there are just players where everyone kind of just feels like this is going to be the guy who's so obviously going to be the right fit, and we don't really push the boat out for them. But yeah, I think that in terms of the protest, it was a really good turnout, and I think it's credit to Change for Tottenham for organising and mobilising, you know, a certain amount of people, because it's hard to do. I think we've seen that in the previous protests. I think no more than probably 150 or 200 have been before, and this one was probably at least, I would say, 1,500 probably, I would say, at this one. So I think credit for Change for Tottenham for having their voices heard. I'm always in favour of people and fans, if they're not happy and disgruntled, having a voice, and especially when we pay, you know, one of the highest season ticket prices in the league, and we are essentially we are as Tottenham fans, charge an arm and a leg. And as well, we are increasingly being treated like kind of consumers and not as like fans and supporters. If the fans are not happy about the situation, especially with us, you know, sitting in bottom half of the league, I'm all in favour of putting pressure on the board and letting them know we are not happy. This is not acceptable to us. And especially as, you know, the problems we've had over the past 5 years, but also the fact that we've only won one trophy over 24 years, I'm all in favour of putting pressure on the board. I'm all in favour of letting them know we're not happy. But I also, I'm not kind of a kind of fan who doesn't see the nuance in the situation.
Yeah, there's the truth is somewhere in between. I think less now, and we've talked about it a lot in the last 5 years, you mentioned it, it's probably gone away from sort of, you know, giving his credit in the bank is lessening. And what about on the pitch, Ange and the team itself?
Well, we're 3 wins in a row, which is...
In the league.
Yeah, people are quick to point that out whenever I say that, which actually, funnily enough, you probably have that stat. We are currently on the longest winning run in the whole Premier League.
Yeah.
So we are the form team in the league, it's fair to say. Are we? Are we currently the best team in the league? Anyway, I'm, as one of the commenters pointed out, I am an advocate of Ange. I do think he can be... success of this club. I think this season has obviously been massively derailed by what happened, kind of the injuries that happened to us, the fact there was so many injuries for so long, that has kind of killed our league kind of potential in terms of competing for the maybe top 5 or top 4, which was the aim at the beginning of the season. I do think if that didn't happen, we would be in that conversation. Unfortunately, it's not going to happen. As well, the domestic cup competitions, we did obviously get to the semi-final of the Carabao, but again, just as we were kind of on the precipice of getting players back, it just didn't happen quick enough, I feel like, to make a difference. And unfortunately,
we lost more, we used to lanky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we ended up bowing out of those cup competitions just as, you know, literally a week before we were getting players back. So I kind of feel for Ange. I don't think he's blameless for the situation we're in, don't get me wrong. And I think, you know, are there question marks about how intense our press is and how much running we do? Are there question marks about... the setup, are we too open, all these different things? No doubt about it. I think there are definitely question marks about those things, and people will land where they land. I just feel like what we saw from us at the beginning of the season, when we did have options to pick from, for me, and also the fact that a lot of these injuries, yes, a lot of them musket, but also a lot of them you have to just put down to luck, like the Solanke, like Bentancur, like Vicario, like you can't really do much about these kind of injuries. So I guess it's how much you portion to luck, how much you portion to Ange himself, how much you portion to just injuries you're just going to pick up as well during a season. So it's difficult to kind of fraction that out. But I would say I want to give Ange to the end of the season. I think we are going to see him to the end of the season. Yeah. I do think with Van de Ven and Romero coming back from injury through that Europa League run, we can make a serious run at that Europa League. And I think, look, I do think the league season pretty much gone, but if we can show some sort of consistency in the league, show we can keep players fit from now to the end of the season, even if certainly with the final kind of 12 games, but also just show, I would say, doesn't have to be crazy, maybe just show like a 2 points per game, show that you can sustain kind of a top 4 kind of form for the last 12 games, then I think you would say Ange potentially has earned another season. But I would say if we... bow out of the Europa League early and we're still, you know, in really poor form in the league, then I think there's probably a conversation for Ange to have at the end of the season.
Can I just pick up on Daniel Pinker saying I'm biting my tongue? Actually, not at all. If you listen to what I've said, what Sim says at the end there is exactly reflective of what I've said. He's a slightly more positive about Ange and what Ange could achieve than I am. But all I've said is he's clearly here to the end of the season. So what do we want to see between now and then? We want to see us go very, very deep in the Europa as a minimum. Semi-finals, absolute minimum. Anything less is failure. We want to see consistency in players coming back and not getting injured, and fitness, consistency in performance. And as Sim says, you know, if we go on a good run until the end of the season, then yeah, potentially he could earn another season. But I personally don't see it. That's just my view. But Sim's only said exactly what I've basically said throughout, just with a different, slightly more positive spin.
And I think the reason I also want Ange to work in terms of where we are as a club is I feel like this club needs a bit of stability. It needs someone at the helm who can kind of head a project. And that, for me, yes, we do spend money, but we're not going to spend the amount of money it's going to take just by purely spending to catch up to those top teams. We're going to have someone in charge for a few years to implement a system to basically have it running like a well-oiled machine.
But that's my concern, Sim.
That's I'm the only not way we're going to sure catch up.
I just don't know if I see it with him, and I've been
and I hear that.
Critical
I hear that.
For a while. And maybe he is, and I'd love to sit here in... It wouldn't be November,
I'm
December
wrong, but
next year. And I'd love to say that I'm wrong, but I think if I was to be wrong, if that's what you call it, I think Ange would have to have adapted. We had John McKenzie on last week who was like, this just isn't sustainable. Certainly isn't sustainable when you've got no players. And he's, but I say he'll get everyone back and there'll come a time, I think he probably still will be in the job at the start of the next season. I still don't know if he is the man for whatever this project is.
I understand that, and I think sometimes you can back the wrong horse, and I think a lot of fans are fearful that is the case. I just want to give every opportunity to prove that definitely is the case, I would say.
Is that your brother, by the way? We are Tottenham TV. Ange has hired Simmons, his defence attorney.
That is probably my brother, yeah. A lot of people have said...
is your brother... where's your brother on this?
He's probably more on where you're probably feeling. He's.
I will get him in next week. Then.
Yeah. I think he's... He, after the Wolves game, he went, I'm Ange out, I want him gone tomorrow, I think he should be gone. And then we beat Liverpool at home, and then he flipped. He was like, I think Ange till the end of the season. Right. And I think, you know, just give him till the end of the season and see what he can do. And then ever since that game, he's kind of been flipping from week to week. Yeah. He doesn't really know where he lands at the moment. But I think he likes Ange as a person. He thinks he's a good guy and he wants it to work. He doesn't, I think he'd like you. He feels like he's not the right guy, I think, and he's not the good enough. Where I'm different. I feel like he can be good enough. I think when the system and when he has options and when the system's in full flow, I think it's a joy to behold, and I think it can be something that we that can work. I really believe that. I think the biggest question mark for me in terms of my biggest doubts is whether his system is going to just always cause his injuries. Yeah. If that's the case, then it's hard to assess that, though, because, you know, last season, let's say for Newcastle, they had also, not maybe as bad as us, but they had a lot of injuries and it really derailed them. But this season is different for them. They kind of have them back. But
well,
it's
fewer
like,
games. They're not in Europe.
Fewer games. But is everyone saying Eddie Howe's system's like just bound to cause injuries? You know what I mean? You look at Arsenal, they've got no strikers. Is that just because of how Arteta plays? Like Maresca at the moment at Chelsea, they've got 8 muscle injuries. 8, which is similar to us. Is that because of just how Maresca plays? It's hard to say, is it purely... put it down to the manager. I think it's harsh to say we had that amount purely down to Ange. I think as well, we've obviously replacing the medical staff, aren't we? We've seen those adverts on LinkedIn. It's highly reported that we've replaced the medical staff. That also takes time to change and implement. So I also feel like potentially when it comes to Ange himself, it is his kind of first job in a major European league. And I think he's probably also, it's a bit of a learning curve.
Well,
for
that's
him.
What I'm saying. I think if we are to succeed, I think he will probably have to adapt. You were going to say?
No, I think a lot of managers will have to adapt. You're talking about the frequency of injuries. The reality is players are playing more games at a higher intensity than ever. And TV and the game, the people that run the game are forcing more games for money reasons. But I think ultimately, to avoid injuries, the quality will probably have to drop because the intensity can't be sustained.
Yeah.
So I think they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. But either way, managers, I think, have to adapt and find a way to get players through that amount of games without incurring these injuries. You've seen it everywhere.
All right, let's go to Saturday. We talked about injuries. We had fewer. There were some rumours around that Maddison, Saar and Davies wouldn't make it. But we actually ended up lining up with Vicario in goal. Spence at right back, Gray, Danso and Udogi was back in. Spence playing right back, maybe for the first time starting. Kulusevski, Bentancur and Bergvall in front. Johnson, Tell and Son up front. First 5 minutes, I was working on the game for Premier League. They had 6 shots in the first 5 minutes.
They did.
You've talked about, Ollie was going on in our WhatsApp group about the kickoff. Villa did it to us. I don't think it's anything clever. It's just a home team. In my opinion, it's up and at them, and we rode it.
I think it's more what John McKenzie was talking about last week. Where, okay, straight from kickoff, he didn't mention the kickoff, but we punted it forwards. Can't quite remember exactly what happened, but essentially we ceded possession. But then what happened was, I think it was our two midfielders, both Bentancur and Bergvall, went to press the man really aggressively, straight from the off, as they did against Villa. And all that happened was he went through the both of them, broke that first line of the press, one pass, and they were in. And that's exactly what John McKenzie was talking about last week. It's that you break that first press from Tottenham and you're in. And they were.
Yeah, I mean, if you actually watched that opening chance, I think it was actually Bergvall and Kulusevski, because I think Kulusevski was playing in the midfield. Okay. So I think Kayuste, I think his name is, he does a pirouette in between both of them.
That's it, yeah.
And then he breezes past Bentancur as well. So the guy took three players out of the game. Now, obviously, when we're pressing, you know, as intensely as we do with high risk, if you take three players out, that it's going to make an effect, isn't it? It's going to open up the space. So I think the midfielders have to take a lot of responsibility for that opening chance. In the first minute. It's also quite interesting, you know, everyone always talks about Porro being caught out, but Spence was also similarly caught out in that aspect. I think it goes to show it's probably a bit more of a tactical issue than a position, a kind of player issue, which I agree with, but I think it's born out of players breaking through that midfield, and once they do, there is naturally going to be space. But that's, I think, with every pressing system, once you break the press, that's why you press, because it's risk versus reward. And you take the risk of, if someone breaks it, there's going to be space there. That's what happened. But what was the difference was Vicario was there instead of
Kinski. They didn't score. You ride those moments out and it makes a difference. Dan So got a good block in and they didn't score. It would have been offside anyway from the rebound, from the shot. We rode it out and then...
That would have been a really interesting offside, by the way, if it had gone in, because it would have been offside because Dancer was behind the goal line. Mm. It's just not one that you often see.
I'm not sure if that's true. I think the way they were set up was that Vicario was in front of, I can't quite picture, but if you're behind the line, you still count as on the pitch.
So why was he offside?
Was there two players?
It would have been.
The way they were stood there, it just would have been offside.
It would have been an interesting call.
It was very similar to the shot that Kinski fumbled, but Vicario saved it. It was just that's the difference.
I think there's no doubt that we all feel look, Kinski came in and did a great job, and especially at Liverpool at home. But Vicario's back, and that's great. Before we know it, though, Gary's mate, Brennan Johnson, pops up with two goals. I want to talk about two players. Son assisted both goals. A little stat for you. Son Heung-min has provided 9 assists for Tottenham in the Premier League this season, including 2 for Brennan Johnson on Saturday. Only in 3 previous seasons has he provided more. So 10 is his record in a season. So he's getting there. People still want him. People want him out. You know, I know he's 32, but he's not finished. And Son has been directly involved in 8 goals in his last 8 Premier League away games. Sometimes we've wondered if his away form was
lacking. Yeah, yeah. Shove that down our throats. It's good. Great.
8 of his last 9 goals and assists in the competition have come on the road. Gary, I'll start with you on your mate Johnson.
There's no doubt that Brennan Johnson is absolutely one of the very best at arriving in the box. No doubt. And his movement in the box is good and he comes alive. Nobody could question that. He's elite in that area of the game. And people would say, oh, but he scored 2 goals, when they hear what I'm about to say. The most memorable thing he did in the game outside of those 2 goals was pick up a booking. I can't remember anything he did outside of the box. And my criticism of Johnson is, if he could be more impactful, effective and involved outside of the box, then you've got a really complete player. But I just sometimes feel that if he's not scoring in a game, he's anonymous and it's like playing with 10 men. That's been my criticism. It's always been my criticism. But what he is good at, he's exceptionally very good at.
But the guy could get 20 goals this season.
Yeah.
Is that not enough?
It's a really difficult one. Because literally, like, you know, if he doesn't, like I say, if he doesn't score in a game, what's the point of him? And that's just kind of not good enough. You know, you take a look at a striker like Harry Kane, whose job it actually is to score goals, and he may not score a goal in a game, but you'd never say that he was anonymous or redundant or not involved. Solanke is always impactful, regardless of whether he scores or not. He's involved in the game. So, you know, if he doesn't score, then it kind of doesn't matter as much. If Johnson doesn't score, I genuinely, what does the guy do? Like, outside of the box, what does he do?
But if he's scoring as regularly as he is,
he's a massive asset.
It's a massive asset, yeah. especially the fact that he can also be having not a great game and also just pop up with a goal at any moment. It means that the defence can't kind of rest when he's around. They know that he could always kind of pop up at that back post. Like, he's such a brilliant kind of positional runner. And when he's getting the level of goal contributions he's currently getting on a regular basis, I just feel like that you can't ignore that. And that that's not something you can
You could
just
have a player involved
away.
More in the game who doesn't score goals. So it's,
look
it's,
at Doku,
it's a conundrum.
Look at Doku on Sunday, you know what I mean?
I'm with you, Gaz, but I'm also with you. It's a really, really interesting
and difficult debate. I don't know what to make of Johnson. He frustrates me because I think he could be so much more than he is.
Yeah.
But the hardest thing in the football is to score, isn't it? Yeah. That is the hardest thing.
Talk to me, Sim, about Son. Mm. Yeah, you get some fans, I'm sure you get comments too, saying, oh, he's finished, blah, blah, blah. You see that goal against Hoffenheim where we were under the... I know it ended up being 3-2, but a little step over, bang, it's 3-1. Those are the moments that not every player can do. As you just said, scoring goal is the hardest thing. He's not finished, is he? And I know Ipswich, he had the Swedish Elfsborg right back on toast. He had the Ipswich right back on toast. Okay, Elfsborg and Ipswich are not Liverpool, Man United and Arsenal. And maybe he's not been as good in those games recently, the big, big games, but he's still an asset.
Massive. And I think, first of all, I think it's no surprise we're maybe seeing a fresher Son and a better Son with a week's rest and it's not being overplayed all the time. I think the reality is, he is 32, and I think as much as we'd all love him to still be like another Mohamed Salah, where he's basically looks like he's as young as ever, and I think Salah's physical profile is a bit different to Son. Son, I think needs to be managed a bit.
100%.
I think he needs to be put in a situation where every time he gets on the pitch, he's at his freshest and he's at his best. And I think the way we've been this season, especially with the injuries we've had, that just hasn't been the case. And he's been played when he's been overtired. He's been played 90 minutes every 3 days for the past 2 months, and it's led to his performance declining massively on a week-to-week basis. And I think recently we've seen a much better version of Son. We've seen a much fresher version of Son. I think he still needs to have that explosive nature about him to be as effective. And I think he clearly has that in him. I think we've seen it enough. And the reality is, I think he's third in the league for like assists or close to that. He's got 15 goal contributions in the Premier League. He's got 20 in all competitions. So he's getting that level of output, even in a season where he hasn't been at his best and he's being overplayed and all these things. So clearly he's still got a lot to offer. I think anyone saying he's finished or he doesn't, or his legs are gone, I think either are not watching or being disingenuous. I think a lot of fans... As it was interesting because Ange, I think Ange said it in one of his press conferences, said when the end comes, it does happen very quickly and it catches up with you extremely quickly. And all of a sudden, 1 week you can be at your best, and a couple weeks later, all of a sudden you start to
De Bruyne at City. Yeah. Like, it happens.
Wait. It does happen quickly.
Wait until Wednesday.
Yeah,
until
true.
Next week.
That's a fair point. And I think a lot of fans, especially on social media, I see a lot of them basically can't try to preempt it. I feel when they try to predict, oh, he must be finished, he's done, he's 32, and all this kind of stuff. Whereas when you actually watch him play in a lot of these games, sometimes he's not taking on his fullback enough, and sometimes he looks a bit sluggish. But you can just see when he gets in those positions in the final third, he's still very clinical. He still provides those unbelievable moments of quality. And I think from now to the end of the season, with Odegaard now back, with Mikey Moore providing more of an option, we can maybe rotate him or manage the minutes. Well, hopefully, we'll see a much better Son for the last 10 games.
I agree. And I think going forwards, if you've got Son coming on after 60 minutes and running at a tired fullback, or you've got Johnson coming off after 60 minutes and running at a tired fullback, that's the ideal sort of scenario for me. And both could have massive value to the squad, but I do see them both as kind of impact subs later in the game than starters going forwards. Or, you know, next season, when you're playing a lower league team and a fullback that might not quite be at that level, then you start Son and say, go and destroy him as he did. You know,
do you mean like a bloke who works in Zara who plays for Tamworth? Or was he the winger?
he was the winger. Yeah. But Son's well capable of it still. And actually this season with Son, I've seen more of a side of his game that I've ignored in the past, but the delivery of cross that he's got, sometimes he doesn't need to beat the man. He's put in some Beckham-esque crosses this season of real quality. So he's just an all-round quality footballer, isn't he?
Yeah, again. I think you're right. People are preempting it, but I've been stunned by the Son is finished. He's 32. So is Salah, and Salah looks far from finished. I mean, the bloke is an absolute machine. It's all about managing minutes. And yeah, we've had a load of injuries and we've been unable to do so. And he's picked up more injuries than ever. He's had that hernia problem. He's had a few problems. He had a problem with career. listen, he's such an asset. And someone said he'll be here to probably mentor Yang and
Mikey Moore and Audible and yeah. He's
and got... I think the stat as well, big chances created. He's still right up there with all the best players in the league. I think he's in the top three or four. So he's still posting decent numbers even in this form.
As Edward here says, Perisic's still going at 38. Yeah, you know, it can be done, and it can be done. And yeah, I'd keep going with Son. And when his contract runs out in the next season, I'd potentially still keep going.
But by the way, that was, sorry to divert, but Perisic putting PSV through at the age of 38, coming back from a horrendous injury. It's lovely to see.
Sorry, did you see Luka Modric just
go? Yeah, Modric is 39. Yeah, listen, footballers now are fitter than ever, and they'll go on longer. And Son is so dedicated to the sport. There's this rumour he's never had a girlfriend or something. You know, he's so dedicated to his professionalism. He's nowhere near finished. I think he's just having... I think he's exhausted. I don't like the word exhausted. James Robbins will pick me up on this because we'll talk about Kulusevski in a minute. But I was like, he shouldn't be exhausted. He's a professional footballer. But, you know, these guys are not robots and they need to be rotated in and out. Sidney Dukes is actually done. He's still diving for penalties at 40. By the way, not really allowed to talk about referees on here, but I thought that was a strange decision.
The penalty.
At Goodison Park, yeah. All right, so we're 2-1 up with those two-nil up with those two Son assists. It wouldn't be Tottenham Hotspur if we didn't let them back in. And that was a great goal from Ipswich. Mm. Yeah, they moved us about, and you had a theory on Danso and Gray.
No, it's not a theory. I didn't understand the logic of Danso being left centre-back, and sort of explained it after that he feels that we may need Danso to be there as the season goes on. Alarm bells ringing if that's the case, because it can't mean anything positive for Van de Ven. But I look at it and I'm just like, you know what, Archie Gray's played there and we know that he can get on there. We know that he can do a job. Why would you take your best centre-back out of his most natural position, as Danso now is our best centre-back that's fit, out of his most natural position and play him on the wrong side? And for me, the goal came because Archie Gray wasn't able to match Delap in the air. And then when the ball broke... The natural thing would have been for Danso to have cleared on his left foot. But because he hasn't got a left foot, he tries to bring it back inside, and that's when they win the ball and go through and score a lovely goal.
Great finish.
So I just feel that goal came about as a consequence of the two centre-backs being on the wrong side. But on the flip side, our first goal came about because Archie Gray had a brilliant bit of skill where he sold the guy, the dummy, got the ball, and then pinged it over to the top. So, you know, give and take, I just didn't understand the logic of Danso being... on the left side in that game.
Just a few minutes before we're going to, as we always do, we're going to have an opposing view on City, and coming on in about 5 minutes, Jack Gorn from the Daily Mail. I just want to focus on, listen, it's a great win, 4-1 on Ipswich, at Ipswich. They've actually been pummeled a few times at home. City did them, Newcastle did them, but we have this weird record against Ipswich, and I feel we had to go there and win after what happened earlier this season when they beat us 2-1. A couple of individual players, Sim Kulusevski, been brilliant all season. I was having a head-to-head with James Robbins in our WhatsApp group. I don't think he's playing as well as he was. Players will dip in and out of form. For you, is that down to exhaustion? And also tell, what have you seen from him in the first few weeks he's been here?
So in terms of Deki, definitely he's in the last, I would say, month or so. He definitely hasn't been as good as he was near the beginning of the season, especially kind of September, October time when he was absolutely flying. It was interesting hearing him in an interview with Sky Sports before the game saying sometimes at the moment he feels like he's playing games at 40-50% fitness. And I think obviously that's obviously going to affect
player. He's played more minutes,
And he's played more minutes than anyone. I definitely think he could do with the rest. I think he could do with a couple of weeks with his feet up, but unfortunately I'm not sure he's going to be afforded that luxury. Hopefully, look, with one game a week at the moment, and you know, we've got an 8-day break after the City game, that could maybe refresh him a bit. But at the moment, he seems to be waning. But I want to say, I don't know if it's purely down to exhaustion, because look how he scored that goal in the 84th minute, the
you
way
see
he
that
ran.
Quality. Yeah.
And it's just also, he looked fresh at that moment, the way he cut inside, he curled it beyond the defender. He looked a lot fresher than the Ipswich defenders. Yeah. And so I don't think it's purely down to exhaustion. I think a lot of it as well, he's being moved around on the right, in the centre. I think when he was playing consistently down the centre at the beginning of the season, I think we saw him really get into his rhythm. Now he's kind of being moved out around quite a bit, and I think that's leading to a bit more inconsistency. But definitely what the biggest difference is, he seems to be getting shoved off the ball a lot more.
Yeah, that's what I picked up on.
That's definitely something. Yeah. So I don't know if that must be down to exhaustion, I guess. I don't know what else that could be down to, because physically he was such a kind of...
a monster.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And he was such
couldn't get the ball off him,
So... I don't know why that's changed massively. It must be something to do with his physicality at the moment. He must be down. So I do think the thing with Deke is even in these periods, he's still providing regular goal contributions. So that just shows his quality. So I'm not worried about him, but definitely I agree with you in the last month. When it comes to Tell, I think, it's not been a great start, I would say, but he's still 19. You've got to remember he's still a teenager, which is mad to think about. You know, he's had that first game at Anfield where he was on the left and people thought, oh, he's got to be up front. Then he played up front against Villa, he did get a goal. And then he's played up front against Ipswich and everyone's like, oh, he needs to be back on the left. So I think he's still finding his feet. He's obviously still getting used to the team. He's still raw.
I think it's different when you're playing for Bayern and you're coming on as a sub with extra quality around you. You might be 3-0 up against Freiburg. Very different to starting at 19 up front in a Premier League team. That is different.
Not as much time on the ball. You got defenders being really physical against you, shoving you out the way. No nonsense defenders. Whereas in the Bundesliga, I think naturally the way that league is, you get more space. It's very open. More teams are high pressing, all these different things. So I think it's going to take some getting used to. I think obviously we've seen flashes of quality, but unfortunately against Ipswich was probably his worst game. He just didn't get into the game at all. He was really bullied by the Ipswich centre backs and he didn't know how to deal with it. And in fact, Scarlett came on and was a lot better than him in the 10 minutes he was on compared to.
And that
to
probably comes from playing regular English football. Gaz, your quick thoughts on Tell before we go and have a little chat about City?
It's too early to assess. Like, it really is. He's got huge potential, huge quality. But he's coming to, let's face it, even though we've won 3 games on the bounce in the league, he's coming to essentially a struggling team, a team that's trying to find its way back to form. We've watched Solanke at times this season. I've felt a bit sorry for him at the lack of service and goal-scoring opportunities he's had.
Yep.
And that's Solanke, who's played in the Premier League, you know, a number of years. So I think I don't think it's fair to judge Tell at all at this moment. He's up there, he's doing a job, and we'll see what happens with him I think the question is, if you're buying Tell for 50 or 60 million in the summer, or you could buy Delap for 50 or 60 million, there's the question. And that says a lot about Delap and how good he is.
At least a top player.
Yeah.
Top player. I think Tell... I don't know if you know more. Is this an obligation or is it a case of we'll see how good he is?
It's an option.
Sorry, yeah, not an obligation, sorry. It is an option, yeah.
And Ange was quite bullish about the fact that Ange said he will be a Tottenham player. That's what he said in his press conference. So he was quite bullish about that. Whether he got ahead of himself or not, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But it was interesting to hear him say, he said, from now, you'll see when he comes, he's going to be a Tottenham player and he's going to fit right at home. So he seems to be certain that Tell's going to stay. I think the talk in January was that Tell didn't want a permanent. He only wanted a 6-month loan. So we'll see if that option really does get activated or not.
It's a shame to see people writing him off already.
That's just the typical nature of fandom right social now. Media. One bad game and you're a flop. Next game, if he starts and does well, he'll be
a world beater.
Exactly. What talent and what a signing. So.
And as somebody's mentioned on our comments here, you know, it took Bergvall a bit of time. Bergvall came from a much lesser league with comparatively much less experience. So I would have expected it to take Bergvall a little bit more time. But we forget that these guys are, you know, great 18, 19. These are kids. These are kids having to man up in the Premier League and do a great job for Tottenham because of the position that we're in.
Absolutely. We'll talk about Bergvall. We'll come back to this after. Mm. We're going to be joined by Man City reporter Jack Gorn, who writes for the Daily Mail. James, is he ready? There he is.
Hello.
Oh, seamless. Absolutely seamless. Jack, thanks so much for joining us. Sorry for pushing the time around, but thank you so much for joining us.
That's all right.
And I think I've got your surname right. Gorn, is that right?
Yep, Vaughan with a G.
Vaughan with a G. So Jack Gorn, a writer for the Daily Mail, Northern correspondent. We're gonna talk about City. Look, another defeat yesterday. It's no shame losing to a very, very good Liverpool side, but it's the 8th Premier League defeat of the season. I think City's most under Guardiola was 9 back in 2019-20. When Rodri got injured last year, it was all about Rodri. The decline was all about Rodri. It can't just be about Rodri now, surely.
No, it's not. I mean, he's a massive part of it, obviously. But it's been sort of similar to Spurs in a way. Just the injuries have completely done him in, and then he got into this like spiral where we get players coming back, and then someone else get injured, and then it's like this sort of hamster wheel of fitness problems, and he's just not been able to get off it. Which I've seen major similarities with Tottenham this year. And the other thing is, I think the hunger's gone to a degree. I was surprised last year that they were able to do what they did by winning a fourth consecutive title after the treble. I just didn't see that coming. I thought Liverpool were going to do it last year, actually, before the season started. But I think once results go against them, the sort of, I don't know, like the confidence and the energy within the place was sort of sapped a little bit. And then, much like the injuries, once you get into that cycle, it's very difficult to get out of it.
Do you know, we talk about our summer here. We signed some young players and we signed Solanke, only one first team player really in terms of Solanke. I looked at City's squad when they were starting to be decimated and the bench was full of kids, and you look at it and you're like, how have Man City got themselves in this position? Is there a theme among fans that actually the squad wasn't ready for this season?
I don't think it was that the squad wasn't ready. Guardiola loves a small squad. He doesn't like having 22, 23 players at his disposal, because he doesn't like upsetting players. He'd rather 16 relatively content players than 20 that have got three or four that are upset about not playing. So it is through design. I've written in previous years, before they did the treble, that it was impossible that they would ever do a treble with this size of squad, and they made me look like a fool, which is fair enough. But then this year, I don't want to harp on about the injuries, but like once you get like 6, 7, 8 and you've only got a small squad, then you are going to have a bench full of kids, and he doesn't really play the kids either.
No.
We've seen it in the past with Cole Palmer, didn't have a chance in his preferred position, so left. James McAtee is probably the best they've got at the moment in terms of the younger players, but he's
22.
And he's 22, and another year's worth of experience in the Premier League, and he's really struggling for games. And they've got a centre midfielder called Nico O'Reilly, who I think played in the Carabao Cup against you guys, and did quite well. He looks a real prospect in midfield, but just can't get a game because you don't trust him.
You mentioned the hunger. When Pep signed the new contract, was yourself or were there fans who thought, actually, not sure this is a great idea? Or was everybody like, it's Pep, we've got to keep him?
Yeah, I think Pep's idea was that he was going to go at the end of the season. That's what was going to happen. And then he felt sort of obliged to sign the contract because they were playing so badly and things weren't sort of... Even before they started losing games, they weren't playing particularly brilliantly. So he signed that sort of because he didn't want to... Yeah, didn't want to leave him in a bad position. He's the best manager that's ever lived, so you can't really turn around and say like. I mean, there's a groundswell of fans online that are sort of suggesting that maybe his time is up, and it's like, well, I think he's the one that should dictate that.
Talking about time being up, I think. After every defeat on social media, you can see a lot of Man City fans calling for major clear-outs, calling for a lot of players to leave. How many of these players currently in the squad do you think will be on their way in the summer?
I think 4 or 5 will probably go. But that is dependent on whether they can get the buyers for the players and whether they can get the right value, what they perceive to be the right value for someone like, I don't know, Edison or Bernardo Silva. You know, De Bruyne, like watching the game yesterday, De Bruyne is just the matches at the highest level are just passing him by, and he didn't start at Arsenal, he didn't come on at the Bernabeu on Wednesday night, and it's just like that sort of thing's completely unheard of. There's more talk about sort of end of an era and the changing of the guard and things like that, which is why they went out and spent 185 million quid in January on three young players, and then Marmoush, who is, you know, coming into his prime. They're a different sort of profile of player that they're going for now.
It's interesting following on from that, because I was watching the other day an interview between Pep and Neil Warnock, which was a lovely interview from Sky. But what struck me was Neil Warnock.
Two great managers.
Two great managers. Different managers.
I really enjoyed Neil Warnock sort of eulogising about his promotions with North County.
But you know, I think it was a lovely interview, and I enjoyed the talk about zonal marking versus man-to-man marking, and Neil Warnock talking in depth about why he used to put his men man-to-man. But what struck me with Pep about that interview, the thing that resonated with me, was Neil Warnock asked him, having signed his contract, if he was looking forward to the next 12, 18 months. And Pep kind of said, no, I'm not. And I think he realises, you mentioned he signed because he feels obliged, and probably he wants to leave City in a similar position to Klopp, and where Slot has picked up from, and Klopp has to take sort of credit for that. But the next 12 to 18 months, how painful are they going to be for City, especially with the backdrop of the charges? Are you able to spend as much? Is this going to be Pep's biggest ever managerial challenge, do you think?
Well, I mean, we'll find out about the charges in the next couple of months. The noises are that they're pretty confident of a positive result from their perspective. And the way that they spent in January and the 300 million quid they're spending on the redevelopment of the Etihad suggest that they think they're going to be okay. I was a little bit confused by the Guardiola sort of, I'm not looking forward to the next 12 months.
So was that.
I did wonder whether that was just sort of in the context of results at the moment, and he's sort of in his head about that. Because if you look at it sort of objectively, they're going to sign 3, 4, 5 players in the summer. They're going to be young players. They're going to be the sort of players that can learn off Pep and absorb what he says, which is what he like really loves. Sort of getting his messages across to impressionable players. So in that sense, it should be one of the most exciting years of his career, really, if he's able to. I mean, I wrote a piece last week after the Real Madrid game that he's now got to spend the next 6 months fine-tuning the fifth version of Guardiola City.
Yeah.
So he's had the first year that didn't go well, but sort of he didn't have his own players. Then he had the two title wins of the Centurions, and then the domestic treble of 2019. Then he had his false nines after COVID. Then he's got the Haaland team. And now it's like, oh, what's this one going to look like? And they're all different in their own way. And there's going to be a different brand and a different style that he's going to put across with these younger players, which is going to be as a journalist, it's going to be quite interesting to watch.
And just looking ahead to Wednesday night, we've got this weird thing over City. We seem to only lose to City when we wanted to lose to City last season. Tottenham have beaten City and Man United three times in all competitions this season. No team has ever beaten. City twice and Man United three times. No team has ever beaten both Manchester sides three times in a season before. How do you see Wednesday going? And also, is there an update?
That's a quirky stat, isn't it? Really had to dig deep.
Listen, we've got to dig deep for positives in here, mate. So how do you see Wednesday night going? And also, is there any news on Haaland?
Haaland, to be honest, I thought he was going to be fit for the weekend. So I'm going to have to say that I think he'll make midweek. I think Spurs will get a result, just because of the sort of the history of these games. It's really strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
It does seem to matter the fact that they really struggle there every year. And actually, the last season, I thought Spurs were pretty good in the circumstances. And actually, I don't know what you guys think about this, but I didn't think the atmosphere was that bad for the first 20, 25 minutes.
It was very
good. It was actually quite good.
It was. I was surprised how good it was. I was like, has everyone realised what could happen here?
it was surprisingly
good.
But it's hard, isn't it? You never want your team to lose. You know, when Son went through, it was one of the worst slow motion moments of my life, where he's gone through and like, yes, no, yeah, what do I want here?
I audibly went, oh no.
Weird game.
Yeah, it was a weird
game. And then afterwards, I was like, obviously, I don't sit in Ange Postecoglou press conferences that much. Sat in that one, I was like, oh my, he's like torching everything.
I think he regretted
that. It's absolutely astonishing.
He has since said he now understands that where we were at a little bit more.
Yeah, it was just, it was like, complete cinema. Sat there watching it. Because when you think like the story of the night was City winning the game and basically one hand on the trophy. But actually, the best story of the night was Postecoglou's kind of
fallout with
Spurs. I don't want to say meltdown, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always fun and games at Tottenham Hotspur. Okay, before we let you go, prediction then. You say we'll get a result. What do you reckon? I reckon you're going to say
3-1 Spurs.
Wow.
Wow.
A rare City goal at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Okay. They did get two last time, but
well, they got two, yeah.
Two, actually. Yeah. That was the first time in the league. All right, Jack. Thank you so much for joining us again. Sorry to push the time around, but really great to get your thoughts, and hopefully we'll speak to you soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, Jack.
Cheers.
Really good. They're a great story at the moment, City.
That's something, isn't it? When you get somebody who's a City in the know. When was the last time do you think a City fan would have predicted a loss to Tottenham?
Yeah. Never.
Well, I mean, obviously years ago, but like not under Guardiola. No City fan would go, oh, I don't think we fancy this one to Tottenham.
They look so, I mean, I think Man United are a fall from grace, but that's like historically over a long period of time. It's stunning how far United have fallen. Obviously City's rise has been very, very quick and sudden. The way they've just dropped off, and like, I can't remember whether you said it on air or off air, the way that, you said it on air, the way that Arsenal have managed to blow the title wins, finally City are not the City that we expect them to be, which is absolutely hilarious. But, you know, like Man United, we've all been City fans for the last 5 or 6 years, like we were United fans as kids. So it's an interesting one. We'll come back to City shortly. I just want to touch on a few things in our comments. People bigging up Bergvall on Wednesday. We, like you mentioned just before we spoke to Jack, Gary, he came from a lower league in the Swedish league, and it was always going to take time. Minutes have been key for him. Probably injuries have helped him. Although that's a place we've not had that many injuries, and I think Andrew's starting to trust him. The way he presses, the way he goes past people, which isn't something that I like. Maddison, I've always thought Maddison was in between sort of Modric and Eriksen, but he doesn't go past people like Modric. He doesn't quite have the class of Eriksen. Bergvall is that player that you need when you're playing in that system, who can just take a player out with a little bit of a shimmy. We haven't had that for a while. And I thought on Saturday that was his best performance.
I thought he was phenomenal. Yeah. And I think it's the way he controls his positioning, the way he takes the ball on the half turn and can breeze past players that are not even there. I think the difference between him and Maddison is just the physical profile. He's so strong. He doesn't get bullied off the ball like Maddison can potentially be. And when I describe Bergvall, I describe him a bit like an ice skater. The way he just glides, his feet don't even seem to leave the ground. He. What I love about him is he can basically move in 360 direction. And how many times on Saturday he was leaving players on their asses because he just can go in a certain direction. They just can't keep up with him. And doing that,
we'll
send you an invoice. Oh,
sorry, it's not your studio, don't worry.
Playing at the Premier League level now, having that kind of base level performance in the Premier League, doing it week in, week out, you know, it took a while for him to get to this level, but he seems to be so consistent at the moment. And Ipswich couldn't live with him. It looks like we were in trouble, he can just pop the ball to Bergvall. He can just take it past the player or play a quick pass in between the lines. He's got an incredible passing range. He can literally do anything. I know he's only 19. He's going to get better, which is even scarier. But I think he's so strong. He's quick. He's unbelievably flexible with his movement. And he's got unbelievable quality. That little ball roll and flick, I think nutmeg.
That was class.
Unbelievable quick thinking.
Gaz.
But he does it with a motive to get
forward. Exactly. It's not just skill for skill.
So
Gaz, from one centre midfielder to another?
From the moment he came in, it was clear to see when he came into the team and had cameos here and there, he had real class about him. But I think if we are to take a positive out of this injury crisis that we've had, it is the emergence of certain players. I mean, if I read to you this team: Vicario, Porro, Romero, Dragosin, Udogie, Kulusevski, Saar, Bentancur, Johnson, Solanke, Son. Would you have that team
say
start?
Say that again.
Vicario, Porro, Romero, Dragosin, Udogie, Kulusevski, Saar, Bentancur, Johnson, Solanke, Son. Would you have that team start, or the team that started on the weekend?
Well, we need Solanke in the team.
And Romero?
Yeah.
That's the team that lost 2-1 at home to Ipswich.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay.
Romero, so, I think Danso's done really well and looks like a good player. I'd have Danso or Romero.
Yeah, but the point is now we're seeing the emergence of Jed Spence, a huge, huge figure, and I'm a little bit concerned that he's not going to start on Wednesday. I think he's going to start Udogie and Porro. We're seeing the emergence.
I hope not, because that will be the final straw.
But we're seeing the emergence of Bergvall, Archie Gray, albeit in a position that isn't his first position, but we're seeing the emergence of these sorts of players, Danso, we've had to go and buy to fill in, but he looks like somebody that's got real value already in this squad. So I think, you know, hopefully we'll emerge from this whole period a hell of a lot stronger, and Bergvall is the one. And I've said to you from the beginning, well, not from the beginning, I've said to you what I would like to see between now and the end of the season when the centre-backs come back is Archie Gray in the six, because I think in the league we can afford to lose a couple of games, we can afford to give them that. Hopefully you'd want to win every game, right? But if you lose a couple, it's not the end of the world at this point. We're not doing anything in the league. I'd like to see Archer Gray in the six and Bergvall in the eight. And I think that should be the combination between now and the end of the season.
I think you agreed at the start of the season, I was like, this is a big season for Sarr. I think he's going to go on and on. I don't think he has gone on and on. And actually Bergvall's potentially overtaken Sarr in... Yeah. If you had to pick one of the two, you'd go
for Bergvall every day.
Midfield was a position I thought we were stacked in. Bissouma, Sarr, Bentancur, Maddison, Bergvall now, Gray.
Kulusevski.
But in terms of that, your central sixes, your eights, it still needs a bit of surgery. But is Bergvall and Bentancur now the starting pair?
It looks like that. It looks that way. He seems to have fancied better Bentancur since he's come back. Mm. And Bissouma... I think in terms of his ceiling as a player, I do think he's probably higher than Bentancur's. But the thing with Bentancur is just probably just a bit more consistent, a bit more disciplined. And he doesn't have as many kind of brain farts in bigger moments like Bissouma does. So maybe at the moment, that's why he's kind of preferring Bentancur in that six at the moment.
Yeah.
I think Bissouma actually, in general this season, I think hasn't been so bad, but I think he has had standout stinkers like the Chelsea at home and Arsenal away, and where in these big moments where we're in the game, he's really let us down. Yeah. And as a senior player, that's been really, really disappointing with the amount of really poor errors and losses of concentration he's had. So I think that's been the killer thing. I think since Bentancur comes in, he has those moments like on Saturday when he got breezed past in the first minute. But I think overall, he's just a bit more disciplined in that position. So I think that's why he prefers him.
Yeah, I think the centre midfield is certainly an area that needs looking at in the summer. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Bissouma was sold. And I think he should be. I don't know that I agree he's got a higher ceiling than Bentancur. I think they're both supremely talented footballers. But what I do think is my expectation of Bissouma is so much more than he has delivered for Tottenham Hotspur.
As people are saying, as Sim said, it's just lack of concentration. And he, brain farts is the word that you used. It's just too much.
And he's at a point now where it's like, is that ever really going to change? He's 27 or something 28. Now, right? 28. So, you know, he's not going to reach the heights that I think his potential has. So it's time to move him on and get somebody younger in. But without any shadow of a doubt, Bergvall for me is our starting eight.
Yeah.
Then you can take your pick of Bissouma or Bentancur. I'd love to see Archie Gray in the six when the centre-backs are back and just build from there.
All right, do you want some stats? I know you like your stats.
Oh, yes, please.
Right, stats from Saturday's win at Ipswich. Tottenham have won their last three Premier League games, as many as they had in their previous 15. They last won four in a row in September, October 2023. As you said, as someone said on Twitter when I put this tweet out about that we didn't do it in 2024, someone made the point that actually not many teams won three, four games in a row in the last year. It's difficult to do. So credit to Ange. Fine. We're not, you know, we sit here and we're critical of Ange. Praise him. We got players back. He said it would help. It's helping. Great. We've won three in a row. Let's keep going. Little quiz for you here, Sim.
Mm.
Tottenham have won four Premier League away games this season by three or more goals. Only in 2016-17 did they win more such matches. So in 2016-17, we won five away games by three or more goals. Can you remember any of them?
Oh, 26.
You're probably at all of them.
Am I just counting?
No, you can play two, guys.
So it's Leicester and Hull, the end of the season.
Those are the two that I had.
6-1, 7-1.
Yeah. Correct.
Those are the two I had. I'm
Watford,
out.
Watford, we beat 4-1.
Yep.
Three. How many more have we got?
Two.
Two more.
One.
Stoke.
Stoke, 4-0, yeah.
Stoke.
4-0.
And then there was one the week before we played Watford. We went and scored the same result somewhere else on the 28th of December.
If Garrison Park.
Gareth Dace would tell us the date, the goal scorers, the minutes. 28th of December 2016, we beat somebody.
Southampton.
Yeah, I don't actually remember that. I remember the Watford
Kane
one.
Kane missed a penalty, I think, on that day.
Was it when it over the bar?
Yeah.
He did a Beckham.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1-4-1.
Was that the same? That wasn't the game where he skinned Van Dijk, was it?
No, that was the year before.
This was like peak Ali. So we beat Burnley 2-1, Ali and Rose. Won 4-1 at Southampton, Ali, Kane, Son, Ali. 4-1 at Watford, Kane, Ali, Ali. Beat Chelsea 2-0, Ali. Beat West Brom 4-0, Ali didn't score. Then he scored at Man City in a 2-2 draw. Fuck, my memory's gone. I don't remember Dele scoring in a 2-2 draw at Man City.
No.
Yes, we were 2-0 up. and we ended up two-nil down, and we came back.
I do not remember that.
Nice segue into
Man City. Yeah, it is a nice segue into Man City.
Well done, Sané, Johnny.
Sané and De Bruyne put them two
up.
And
then
two howlers from Lloris, I remember it.
And then Deli and Son.
No, really?
Surely not.
Just a couple more stats before we quickly talk about City. Brennan Johnson scored his first Premier League brace for Tottenham and his first in the competition since March 2023 for Forest. He's now scored 9 Premier League goals, his most in a single campaign. I look at Gary. All right, City.
That's what it does well.
I'm going to give you some stats before City. One I just gave to Jack. Tottenham have already beaten Man City twice this season. The last team to win 3 games in a campaign against the reigning English champions were Man United, who did it to City in 2019-20. The last time Spurs beat the reigning champions twice in a season, we beat Liverpool twice in 84-85. None of us
remember that.
And then, like I said,
gave to Jack, Tottenham have beaten City twice and United 3 times in all competitions. No team has ever beaten both Manchester sides 3 times each in the same campaign. Obviously, you'd have to be drawn against them in cup competitions to do so. But we go into City in confidence, City not in confidence. We always beat City unless we want to lose to City. Mm-hmm. How do you see Wednesday going?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I think Ange himself, apart from that game, he's unbeaten overall, isn't he, against Man City? I think last season...
Yeah, he's not
we
lost to City or United, yeah.
And we obviously lost...
FA Cup, we lost to him in the FA
Cup. Yes, we lost in the FA Cup 1-0, yeah. That's fair. And then this season, obviously, we've beaten them twice already. I think we're going to come into this with a point to prove that we are going to be serious about the, you know, this run at the end of the season. We've been through so much kind of pain and poor results and criticism. And I think with the players, you know, coming back and now we have options, I think you can see there's a difference in mood in the change room on the pitch. I think you can see the difference in energy there was on Saturday. I think we're going to go at them. We know that Ange is not going to go into this game thinking, let's sit back and, you know, grind out a draw. We're going to be going at them. We're going to be going for the win. We're going to be going for goals. And Man City will obviously want a reaction to
I'm not sure they've got it in them.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, they've been going for the title. They've had this unbelievable mentality for the past 4 years where even if they have a setback, like, they've just got this unbelievable mentality of they just keep winning. They keep kind of getting themselves up for these games. But now the title's absolutely gone. They're, nearly 20 points behind.
Yeah.
They're in an absolute dogfight for top four. I think they're on 44 points. I think, like, 8th or 7th is on 41. So they could, like, after this weekend, they could drop down really, really low. So they're in a dogfight for top four. But being in a dogfight for top four and being in that title race where they know every win just keeps them at the top is very, very different kettle of fish. And I feel like this top four race... do they have the mentality to make sure they're keeping in the top four, or are they going to let their standards slip? Especially, I'm not looking at the new guys like Mamouche and Gonzalez and Kuzanov, and I think these guys, and even Ndoku and Savio, they'll be up for it. I'm looking at the guys who have just been, who are knowing that they're in the end of their careers. They know that they've been at Man City for a long time. They might be on their way out. And will they have the stomach and the will to fight for a top four top four place like they've been doing in the for the league title? I don't know.
Yes. City's always interesting because they play in a way that should suit us in the sense that they will dominate the ball. Probably they're one of the few teams that will dominate the ball against us. And I think, I mean, I only half watched the game against Liverpool yesterday, but Liverpool looked most dangerous basically on the break, turning them around.
And they totally sucker punch.
Yeah. And I was only half watching the game, but that was my impression. Every time I glanced up, I could just see Liverpool bearing down on goal from the halfway line. So City, in some ways, it's not the way that Ange wants to play, but I do think 100%. I do think it kind of suits us. Yeah. And I think they will whatever state they're in, whatever their confidence, they would always look to play the same way. They are a more technical football team than us, so they will have the lion's share of the possession and the field tilt, if you want to call it that.
Yes.
But that is
probably... You feel they don't hurt you as much as they used to, so
No, they don't. And if we defend well, they could end up playing straight into our hands, which is what seems to happen against City so often, because we are a very, very good transitional team, which is one of my criticisms of Ange under the injury crisis. Maybe psych it up a bit and play on the break a bit more, because we are so good at it and we have been for a long time. But I think City will fall into those traps again, and that will present us with a couple of really, really good opportunities. Defend well, and we've got every chance of winning.
Would you make any changes starting?
I'd have Danso right centre back. No, I really would, because I think if he plays left centre back, I think they will see him as a weak link and somebody they can press And I think he got away with it a couple of times against Ipswich, but I don't think he's as comfortable on the left as somebody like Archie Gray. But then again, hopefully Ben Davies will come in and dance. So,
and you're saying that Gray is more comfortable on the right, though. So is that
Well, of course he is, but Gray is also more comfortable on his left than I think Danso is. We've seen Gray on the left. He can actually open his body and play it out. He is a bit more... I would be very concerned with Danso left centre-back, that City would see him as somebody they can press in the way that teams did Dragushin. On the right, I don't think you can press Danso as much because he'll breeze past you and he's got a decent range of passing. On the left, get him onto his left foot and I think he's in trouble. I don't think he's got a left foot. But that's a one thing that I would like to see is Danso back on the right. But aside from that, you know, Spence starting... Bergvall in. I think the rest of the team kind of picks itself. I would personally not be playing Johnson. I would put Kulusevski right and Maddison in.
Daniel Pinker thinks Cooley will be rested. I don't believe that will happen.
No, I think Kulusevski should start on the right and I'd put Maddison in. And that might fly in the face of me saying that we should play on the transition. But yeah, I think as long as you've got Son and Tell, then you're pretty much okay for pace.
Do you reckon there's any chance, a sneaky chance, we could see one of Romero or Van de Ven on Wednesday?
I don't think there's...
I hope not.
They need minutes before RZ, but at the same time, every time they come back, they get injured again.
Yeah, so this is why I say I hope not. Like, because if they did, it would almost feel
there's
like...
There's an 8-day break between the two games.
But it almost feels like it is...
Might as well, you're saying you might as well wait another 8 days?
Yeah, like, I don't want risks being taken. It's not worth it. We're not going down. We're not qualifying for Europe. I'd love to beat City. If we don't, it's not the end of the world, let's be honest. It is the end of the world if one of them comes back in and gets crocked again, so...
But you do also... But that fear could happen anytime. They could get crocked if we put them in against Arsenal.
Sure, but when Ange's been saying that he wants to manage them and really make sure they're back to fitness. Now, if he's saying they're 100% back to fitness, they're ready to go. Great, absolutely, put them in. Absolutely. Yeah. But if they're even 95%, what's the point?
Yeah, we've not even seen Romero in any training videos. I know it doesn't mean much, but I'm not sure he's ready to play.
And the fact that Ange's saying, you know, we might need Danso left centre-back, says to me, that just had alarm bells ringing about Van der Ven.
I think if we had a game on the weekend, whether it was an FA Cup game or a Premier League game, whatever the schedule was this weekend, I think we may see them at the weekend, but we don't. So I just think he will... I don't reckon they're ready. Mm. And I think... I certainly don't think Romero is ready. Van der Ven may be, but I just... great if they do, but I wouldn't be surprised if we don't.
An interesting one is Solanke, who was... a week or 10 days ago, rumoured to be 2 weeks away. Now, he could be on the bench and get 20 minutes at the end.
Didn't he say 2 weeks away before Ipswich? So I don't think he's ready.
He said before the Ipswich game, he said looking similar to Van der Ven and Romero for the first leg. Probably just after for him, sorry.
But he's lied's the wrong word. He said different things. Odegaard, we didn't think he'd be back. He was on the bench against United. Yeah. I don't think we thought we'd see him for a while. Johnson, again, he was a little bit... unsure on
Johnson as well. He said he was sore and then he was missing for 3 weeks. Davis as well. I've heard he's injured and he was on the bench. And he's saying he was managing his minutes and yet he was not on the bench.
I got Billy on here says Solanke after the international break. I can't see that. I think Solanke is in the squad against RZ. If you say it's 2 weeks, I think he's possibly at the moment. It seems to be Ange is giving this figure, and actually the players are coming back a little bit quicker. Bar Romero and Van de Ven, players just seem to be coming back. We do need a centre forward. Richarlison's a way out. We talked about Tell briefly. Bless you know.
Scarlett.
There was a moment on Saturday when Scarlett kind of had a one-on-one with the defender, and I was like, "Oh, you're not as quick as I thought you were." No, I don't think Scarlett will start against RZ. And by the way, we'll talk about RZ next week, but they're a better team than what I saw when we played them. We'll just talk about that very quickly before we go. We didn't react to that maybe in club news. We should have. We didn't really want to play Sociedad. I watched them again last night against Leganes. They were a decent, tough team. Yes, we've got the better draw, but, you know, we only beat them 1-0.
Yeah, we did. We were a very depleted team. And their main threat for me is a guy I really like. But he's also very raw. But everything to me that they do that looks really dangerous comes through Poco, their winger.
The Eredivisie Docker.
and what we didn't have in that first leg that we do have now is the cheat code winger of Spence. You know, you put up any winger against Jed Spence and he'll just take him on. So you kind of should nullify their main threat of Poku straight away. And I think a fully fit Tottenham team, or even a more fit Tottenham team than the one that we had against them, would be a really bad result to go out to them.
Against the fifth best team in Holland in the Europa League round,
and you go out.
But they did take Galatasaray to the cleaners, and both they batted.
I mean, my views on Galatasaray are I have zero respect for them as a football team. I think going forwards, great, but I said, like, you could be 3-0 down to Galatasaray, and 5 minutes later, you'd be 4-3 up. Like, they're a joke.
You could
of
do
a
that
team.
Against Tottenham.
Yeah, but Galatasaray in particular are a joke of a team. With that said, RZ did very, very well. Mm. Very well. Gala had a man sent off in that first leg at 2-1, and RZ took AZ took complete advantage of that and won 4-1, as they rightly should have done, and then went out there and got the job done. But Gala, I mean, they're just so unpredictable. But yeah, they beat a decent Galatasaray team. I think Galatasaray were overhyped when they were top for that period of time. And then they beat us when we were playing, what, Lancashire up front. And I think, do we have a man sent off as well? I can't remember.
No, not against
them. Not against them.
They did late on.
They did.
But, and Jay Max says Van Bommel got injured. We were looking forward to seeing him play. And then he's also injured again, hasn't played since the start of Jan. So who knows? We'll try and talk to...
And Parrott will be back.
Parrott will be back. Yeah, we'll talk to about that next week. Parrott will be back. Yeah, it's a good joke. I know. I got it. All right. So I think that's it. That's it. Before I get your predictions, Sim, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been a pleasure being on here.
It's not lost on me. I've been sort of tracking the viewer numbers, and it's been our biggest on the live show so far in terms of people watching live. So you're a big draw.
Got five.
Big up. I'd love to come on again. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome to come on.
You're going to play it now.
Me or him? Ryan, quality pod, could listen to you guys for hours. James wouldn't let us. We can crack on, but
I've got time. I'll stay here and chat to you guys.
I got some work to do.
The thoughts of Gaz.
Yeah, we could do that. Well, there has been thought that I'm going to give you like just half an hour to rant, Gaz.
I mean, I could rant about anything at any time. So,
all right, let's get predictions for Wednesday. Starting with you, Gary, Tottenham Hotspur, Manchester City.
I will go 2-1 Tottenham.
2-1. I'm going to go 4-2. Goals.
To Spurs,
of course. Yeah.
Unfortunately, 4-2. I can't go. It's the second game I've missed this season at home. I'm no, I think, you know, like you, home and away. But
so
I tried
you can't
to
get, pick to win if you're not going.
the one game I missed this season, we lost. I can't remember what it was. Ipswich didn't go to that.
So it's your fault.
It was my fault. I think it's going to be Tottenham. Ronnie says Tottenham 3, Man City 2. Classic cup final scoreline. Yeah. Is it me and you who watched that back once?
Yeah.
Before we played Barnsley away in the FA Cup, which is the one that got postponed, we sat down and watched the start of the 1980
front rim of your dad's house.
81 cup final. We started watching it back. My dad had it on VHS. There could have been.
I think it was like four sendings off.
Four sendings off in the first 10 minutes. Yeah. Like they were just
under
kicking.
Today's rules.
Half of them weren't even fouls.
Yeah.
The ref was just off the ball,
brutality.
Lumping.
Game's gone.
Game's gone. Right, just some of the predictions here. NSG says 3-3. Ryan says 2-0 Spurs. Ronnie, as I said, says 3-2 Spurs. Sydney Duke, another 2-1 win. Billy, easy 3-1 win. Daniel Pinkers, could be anything. Yeah, that's where I'm at. Beanie Guy says, Iceman a draw. I agree, Beanie Guy. I'm going to go 2-2 draw. I can't go. I've got my daughter's birthday. I was supposed to work.
Priorities.
I was supposed to work. And I was like, you know what? It's my daughter's birthday. I've got to do that.
Just a quick one, because you reminded me, speaking about off the ball challenges against City in that cup final. Off the ball challenge against Ipswich on Danso.
Mm. Oh, God, yeah. Again, I'm not really allowed to talk about refs. I'm not getting in trouble.
Well, you sit out. You be quiet.
He had no eyes for the ball. It was like the ball was going away. He completely just left the ball, and I'm going to shoulder barge this guy in the back, really. I thought it was really odd that the referee didn't pull that up. I thought it looked like a penalty to me. Yeah,
and some people say, I've seen it said, he hasn't got the ball, he wasn't in control of the ball, and he wasn't going to get there. Well, if he wasn't going to get there, the defender's got no need to make the foul.
Yeah.
Right, so... I'll tell you what you don't see in football anymore, and John, you might be able to comment on this. Is obstruction still a thing? Like,
because you rarely get it.
But it's still a thing, right? Like, if it's not a penalty, then it's an indirect free kick for obstruction.
Yeah, it could have been obstruction.
Like, but it's something, right? It's not nothing. If that's outside the box, all it takes outside of the box, you know, you see it all the time. A fullback in the corner, and he gets a little touch on the back from the winger. Fullbacks, like
a given free kick.
He'd have given
a free kick the other way. If Dancer had done that to him,
it's completely off the ball, right? Yeah. Outside the box, it's a free kick. It's a penalty all day long. I couldn't get my head around that.
All right, I'm going to, back to the predictions. I'm going to predict a draw 2-2, which Matthew Ball agrees with. George Pena says 3-2 Spurs. Nate Wilson says 4-1 Spurs. Our press to cause major issues with City. Nate, go back and watch John McKenzie on our press. Matthew Ball, just said, could go either way, but he reckons a draw. All right, gentlemen, thank you. Gary, thank you for being here. As always, Sim, thank you so much for joining us. Obviously, I don't need to tell people where Sim is from, but go and like and subscribe to We Are Tottenham TV. If you don't, why not? It's the best Spurs channel out there.
Get them up to 180,000, isn't it, that you're chasing now?
Remember, subscribe to Echo of Glory. Fantastic pod. I watch every episode. Absolutely love it. So, absolute pleasure being on the pod.
Thank you. Sim, thank you so much. We will see you soon, hopefully. Gary, probably see you next week.
I'm not here next week.
You're not here next week.
Genuinely, it's my wife's birthday. So,
all right. Bloody hell,
during the season. All right, we'll sort it out. We'll be back next week. And up the Spurs.